rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Game World Cup podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer. This wasn't football, declares the back page of The Times today, echoing Phil Neville's comments after one of the most extraordinary World Cup matches ever. England are through to the quarterfinals, but all anybody is talking about is the antics of their opponents, Cameroon. Here to analyse a quite remarkable last 16 game, we're joined by the former England, West Ham and Chelsea defender Claire Rafferty. And down the line in France, we have Times' chief sports writer Matt Dickinson, and from The Times and Sunday Times, Molly Hudson and Rebecca Myers. Later on, we'll be assessing England's last eight opponents on Thursday and saying farewell to a legend of women's football. But first, we start with a game that will go down in infamy. England beat Cameroon 3-0 in Valenciennes to reach the World Cup quarterfinals on Sunday night. But sadly, little of what went right will be remembered. Phil Neville said he was completely and utterly ashamed of the behaviour of the Cameroon players after they twice threatened to walk off the pitch in protest at VAR decisions. There was also an elbow thrown, several bad tackles and one case of spitting as well. Now, Claire, in all your time in the game, have you ever witnessed anything like what we saw?
Never, ever. And I don't think many people will say they have. It was absolute chaos. In the end, upon reflection, I feel really sorry for the referee. Yes, she could have been a little bit strong with her punishments, but to kind of control 11 players who were all throwing their toys out of the pram, it was a difficult task. And we were discussing before what would have happened if they actually decided not to restart. Would have been a whole different debate. And unfortunately, we're not even talking about the football now. We're talking about the behaviour.
Yeah, and that is the real shame about all of this. But the two calls that enraged Cameroon the most were the two VAR decisions. The first was to award a goal for Ellen White, ruling correctly that she was onside, making it 2-0 to England. The second, shortly after half-time, was to disallow a goal from Anjara and shoot after VAR showed that there was an offside in the build-up. Matt, you were at the match last night. Did you have any sympathy with Cameroon over the decisions?
Certainly not those two. They seem to be, you know, I mean, the communication with the VARs remains, I think, possibly the biggest issue. And as far as we could tell, there was one sort of screenshot that flashed up and Nikita Parrish was in an offside position but not interfering for the Ellen White goal. And that seemed to cause the confusion among the Cameroon players. But it felt like they were... they'd already been sort of rattled by, you know, the early booking for the elbow was more than justified. They were rattled by the you know, I guess the certainly debatable back pass decision that led to England's first goal. But then they lost the plot. I mean, there's no two ways about it. They, you know, there was no justification for how they, you know, the whole point of VAR, as we've discussed many times, is that, you know, someone gets to see replays of a decision and make the most accurate assessment they can. And the idea that you will sort of go completely crackers about a decision that's been made. Yeah, the Cameroon, it's not like the Cameroon players had any evidence that supported them in the slightest. Mm. Quite the opposite.
It's just to pick up on something you mentioned there about Cameroon perhaps seeing a screenshot of that Ellen White goal where Nikita Paris was in an offside position yet not interfering with play. Does this game maybe suggest that the definitive decisions by VAR should also be shown in stadiums?
I think so. I mean, I know the Premier League debated it recently and you know, it's something that every league is discussing, how much you show, how much you don't show, and that's left to individual leagues to decide. I personally think, there's been sort of debates about, well, if you show it, there could be, does it inflame trouble, does it not? I think yesterday makes the case for showing more and just for having clarity on the screen, that, you know, just showing that image of a line, even, you know, just to say this has been ruled offside because, you know, and here's a line across the pitch and then get on with it. But I do think there was something freakish about yesterday. I just don't, you know, it felt sort of completely out of hand in a way that, on the one hand, yeah, we got to examine and see what can be improved upon. But equally, you just, well, as Claire said, I've never seen anything close to that in a game of football.
Claire, let me ask you about whether or not you have sympathy for Cameroon. This is the first time VAR's been used in a Women's World Cup. And for many players, it's completely new to them. Do you feel that perhaps you could have sympathy towards Cameroon because of that? They're not used to VAR and how these decisions are made.
But you could argue the same for the England players, because in the WSL we don't use it, so it would have been their first exposure to it as well. For me, I totally applaud passion and belief and desire and will to win. But the lack of emotional control was the issue here. And I sent a tweet out last night saying, you know, when you're given a platform such as a privilege of playing at a World Cup, you know, you hold a certain amount of responsibility to, you know, whether you like it or not, you're a role model, not just to girls and boys in your own country, but all around the world, because millions of people are watching this and it's not a good example. It was chaotic. The referee, you know, should they have shown it? I think it did create a little bit more animosity in the stadium as well. I know there was a bit of trouble I saw a few tweets in the stadium. But I'm confused. I'm just confused with all. For me, an offside's an offside. It's factual, so I don't know what the issue is.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I mean, I mentioned that in the piece there. You know, people sort of talk about sort of a controversial VAR decision because it was only an inch. I mean, an inch is an inch, and if we're going to use it for offside, which makes complete sense, then, you know, that's as offside as 3 feet. But I think that's a really good point Claire makes. Being in the stadium, it was, you know, I mean, we all like drama, but this was ugly, and it doesn't matter what gender we're talking about, men's, women's World Cup, it was ugly, and there was more issues of the crowd, but I have to say I found myself thinking, wow, if this was a men's tournament with, you know, undoubtedly a more aggression in the stadium, shall we say, then I really would have feared for what might have happened, because there was a lot of shouting and booing and agitated people, and it sort of felt like, crowd-wise, we sort of got away with something that could have actually turned out to be a lot worse.
Neville said it damaged the image of the women's game, Claire. Do you think he's right?
No, I don't. I think that's a little bit harsh. I'd like to think that the women's game has got a bit more depth to not be defined by just one isolated incident. I do think there should be some, you know, punishment for Cameroon, just, you know, so that we can set a precedent that this behaviour is not acceptable. But obviously, it's a bigger stage and we don't want to be seeing that. And lots of people now have their opinion. But, for me, at least people are talking about women's football. I know it's not in a good way, but, that, you know, it sparked a little bit more interest. But to say it's damaged women's football, I think is a little bit extreme. Yes, the game was a mess and it wasn't enjoyable to watch. It was, you know, hard to kind of stay invested in because of it just got out of control. Mm. But I think what England did, they stood up and, you know, they counteracted that with their, you know, ultra-professionalism. They didn't get wound up. They didn't allow it to get to them. They rode the storm and came out 3-0 winners, and they're into a quarter-final. And we have to now put this to bed, the Cameroon situation, once the FIFA deal with it and move on, because, you know, it's coming home.
We've still got to talk a little bit more about what happened away from the result itself. And Matt, Claire was just saying there that everyone now is talking about the Women's World Cup today, perhaps for the wrong reasons, but is not all publicity good publicity?
I don't really feel so. I don't think it was. You know, I'm not saying this just because it's they've been men's or women's. It was not a good look for football. And say, you know, we all like drama, and you know, stuff goes wrong and passions boil over. But it was not, as I say, partly because of that crowd issue, partly because actually it felt farcical in the stadium. It felt like it was bringing the whole issue of ref. You know, I think the vast majority of the blame has to go with Cameroon and their indiscipline. But I don't think, you know, the referee tried to go soft, and it clearly was, you know, that started failing pretty early. I mean, I felt that she had this sort of fixed grin of "I am in control" on it, where actually probably her brain was thinking, you know, "Oh my God, what do I do about this?" And she tried to sort of go down the road of appeasement. And that didn't work, and it didn't. You know, even if VAR is making the correct decisions, it didn't feel like a good day for VAR, because it just felt like it brought that sadly and sort of unnecessarily back into a mass debate. So yeah, you know, on the one hand, say we come to football for drama, but this did not feel a good day for the tournament or for football, and that's sort of not to do with women's football. It just didn't. This would have been a bad look, whoever was playing.
There were lots of incidents in this game. Nikita Paris was elbowed in the face. Tony Duggan was spat upon. And we also had, of course, Steph Horton being stamped on towards the end of the game as well. The former Premier League referee Peter Walton writes at thetimes.co.uk today that the elbow and the stamp should both have been red cards. Matt has suggested there that maybe the referee towards the end of the game was trying to appease the situation. Do you think, Claire, she should have been stronger, or do you think she was trying to be diplomatic towards Cameroon and trying to placate them, basically?
I think from the outset, she gave the yellow card initially, didn't she, for the elbow, so she was aware of it. But I think she should have been a little bit stronger, and then from then on in, it kind of got more and more lenient, almost to try and keep the peace, perhaps. For me, the icing on the cake was when the referee actually got pushed herself, which I just couldn't even comprehend. I don't know if she kind of understood really what happened to her. I think maybe she thought it was an accident, and that's why she laughed it off. But for me, seeing the replays, I think it was on purpose. And I would like to see VAR brought in for them kind of incidents as well, because, you know, that's the sending off. Mm. You can't push a referee. You can't have girls and boys watching football games and see a player push a referee, because if that was in the Premier League, it would be absolutely, you know, stamped upon and frowned upon, and the player would be sent off and all sorts. So,
I mean, VAR is there to look at red card situations. Matt, did you see that push on the referee? What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, I certainly saw it on the replay. Yeah, I mean, it looked deliberate to me, and yeah, absolute straight red card. I thought the elbow early in the game, I could just about, I mean, I think there could have been no complaints if it was red, but if you let that one, I mean, the Steph Horton one towards the end, I mean, by that stage, you know, you could absolutely tell with that the referee was just thinking, I just want to get off, she should get, you know, a sort of black mark for that. I'm sure she will get a black mark for that in whatever grading she gets from FIFA. And I just felt that she, you know, I don't want to put the load of blame on her, because ultimately the Cameroon team made it a really hard afternoon for her. But I think, to say, she went down the road of trying to sort of keep the peace, and ultimately she needed probably to deliver a pretty hard shock to them in the first half. I mean, when they first sort of stopped, we were, you know, talking about it afterwards last night, of when they stopped playing the first time. I don't know what I should find out exactly what the FIFA sort of guidelines is on that. You know, do you book the captain? Do you, you know, but it felt like she needed to, at that point, do something very firm to say, look, I'm in charge of this game, and you better start playing it or else.
The Cameroon players appeared in their protest to be pointing towards the VAR replays on the big screens, as we've already suggested there earlier, that part of the idea of VAR is that it offers the indisputable verdicts, particularly when it comes to offside. So, Matt, are you concerned that VAR is being so heavily criticised on and off the pitch at the moment?
Yeah, well, I do wince, because, you know, someone who has, you know, thinks that, you know, I did a column on it last week, and just, my, you know, always come, you know, even through any VAR controversies, and we've had a few, I still come back to this place of thinking, well, if if we can't make it work, you know, we're not doing it right. We're not being very smart and intelligent about it. So I think, you know, we can get to a place where it works. I think yesterday was freakish in the extent of the crazy overreaction to it. I think the decisions on the offsides, I think using it for those offsides makes sense. I do have a feeling, and I think this is a problem area of this, partly made worse of this tournament, is that maybe officials are sort of hiding behind VAR a bit. I think, you know, the certainly in my experience, it works best when referees go out feeling they are in charge, they are making decisions, and then if they get one horribly wrong, it's corrected. That's how it was meant to be set up. Mm. The referee goes about the game, you know, feeling like their job is to make calls as they see them and then get corrected. I feel like maybe the one of the problems with this game, certainly, and a few others I've seen, is that officials are thinking, oh, well, you know, I'll wait and see if VAR intervenes. And I don't think that is how the system can work to the best.
Does that concern you then, Claire, when you hear that?
Well, look, it's not going to be in the league next season in England, so it's almost like...
In the WSL.
Yeah, in the WSL. Mm. Obviously, it's going to be in the Premier League, but I just think it's the standard of the referees that are not exposed to the VAR. You know, obviously the players haven't been as well, but you can only really learn from, you know, replicating the match day situations, and you only get to do that on a match day. So it's all a learning curve, and that's just something that maybe we have to just embrace.
Mm. Matt, thank you for joining us.
No problem.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, as Cameroon imploded, England managed in the main to keep their heads. Rebecca, you were watching the team closely last night. Who stood out for you amid the chaos?
I mean, for sure, Steph Horton, she was fantastic, and she always is such a sort of calm presence. I mean, only once really did she go over to sort of have words with the referee, but when she did, she was incredibly composed. You know, she could have really, really lost her cool, especially given how her players are being treated, but she led by example, incredibly calm, and yeah, I mean, just an absolute sort of epitome of what a captain should be for me.
Molly, you wrote for The Times, interesting, with Rebecca picking up on Steph Horton there, that England will have been concerned by the gaps in their defence. They had looked pretty solid up until that match against Cameroon.
Well, I think there's certainly been things that could be improved upon in all the games that have played so far, and I think one obvious weakness of the England team is defensively, particularly from the left, that sort of area when Alex Greenwood's been playing. It feels as though it's quite attacking, you know, when the team sort of really targets us down that side, we seem to struggle. A couple of times Alex committed last night where maybe, you know, she should have just taken a moment to sort of calm down and assess the situation rather than jumping in. And I think that's certainly something that Bill will maybe look at going forward in terms of where to start Demi Stokes in that position. I think obviously yesterday was a very individual set of circumstances that probably won't be repeated. And hopefully the players won't be put into that sort of situation again. And I think that did affect them. But, you know, there were times when defensively England should have been better and particularly coming up against Norway, you know, that is something that will be tested, and they've got to be a lot better if you want to make it into the semi-final.
Mentioned there that horrible tackle on Steph Horton. She was being treated after the game. How much of a loss, Claire, would she be if she can't play in this quarterfinal?
Yeah, well, Steph Horton is a leader on and off the pitch, and without her, I think the defensive frailties will only increase. The thing is, though, he's obviously rotated the squad a lot, and he's said multiple times how much he trusts the strength and depth of the team. If she can't play, then, you know, it's kind of the biggest test for what he's been saying, and whether he's right in making them calls. You know, Abby McManus has played a few times, so it wouldn't be too much of a shock for her to come in. So you can see why potentially he has entrusted, you know, his squad depth because of these situations. You know, in a World Cup, you never know what's going to happen, and sometimes you do end up losing your leaders on the pitch, and it's then an opportunity for someone else to step up. You know, one door closes, another opens. So if she can't play, the likes of Leah Williamson or Abby McManus, it's their opportunity to shine.
That's who would fill her position. Who would fill the role as the captain? Because obviously Steph Horton is such a leader out on the pitch. You always see her being so vocal and gesturing to her teammates on what they should be doing. So who takes on that role?
I think naturally it'll probably be passed to Jill Scott. I'm sure she'll be playing. She's been fantastic in the previous games, and you know, she leads in her own way. For me, the armband is just a symbol. It doesn't really kind of change how players are, and there's so many, you know, other leaders on that pitch without the armband. So it's just an opportunity for everyone else to step up. You know, a lot of players like Lucy Bronze, they lead with their feet. So it's only an opportunity for other people, I think.
Molly, you mentioned about Norway on Thursday in the quarterfinals, and Claire has spoken about the fact that Phil Neville likes to rotate. Do you expect him to shuffle his side again? And if so, what changes do you think he'll make?
I don't think he'll massively change it from last night. I think, you know, as I said, maybe Demi will come in place of Alex Greenwood. Perhaps Georgia Stanway will feel sort of grieved that she didn't get to start last night ahead of Frank Kirby. And I think, you know, Tony Dunn didn't have a great game on the left again, so perhaps Beth Mead will come back in. But I think, you know, it's that time of the tournament where, regardless of Neville or what he said about rotation, you have to play your strongest team. Norway will not be easy to beat, even with our strongest team, and I just don't think we can afford to rotate or underestimate the kind of threats they possess.
Claire, what can we expect from Norway then?
Very adaptable team, very tactically astute. They like to go with a 4-4-2, and for me, their biggest threat is that two up top, occupying the two centre-backs. So you'll have to be very disciplined and switched on. And I'd like to see the likes of Jade Moore coming in to try and increase the defensive stability because of that. But, you know, they've got some great individual players. Hansen just signed for Barcelona. We all know how great she can be. She was electric when she was picking the ball up against Australia in the counter-attack. So you need to be very aware of that. You know, Royton, you've got the two Chelsea centre-backs who have grown into the tournament. Initially was a little bit shaky, but Maren Mjelde is a fantastic leader. And by the way, she nullified Sam Kerr in the Australia game. She knows how to manage these big games. So it'll be a difficult game, but we need to be a lot more concentrated as the game goes on. I think it will be a low-scoring one, just because the two teams will cancel each other out.
Rebecca, we're sort of still waiting for that standout England performance. I know a win is a win, and at the end of the day, you'll only ever remember the win and not the performance. But has that in some ways disappointed you from the England that we've seen so far, that we're not really talking about that overall general amazing performance?
Yeah, in some ways. And Molly wrote a great piece today about, you know, actually the flaws in the game, and the fact that at the end of the day, OK, we won 3-0, but we're not perfect by any stretch. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. And in a way, maybe we're all still waiting for that England team that we want to see, that actual performance that just blows away all others and puts us out there as a world-class team. Maybe we haven't really seen that yet. On the flip side, you know, we are coming away with, I think we've had one goal against this all tournament, a record number of wins in a row. So sometimes I wonder whether we're all being a bit harsh just because our expectations are so high. But that's in line with Neville. That's what he asks of his players. He's got incredibly high expectations. And I think Hope Solo said this yesterday. What she loves about him is that he never really satisfied. He always looks at what they've done and says, well, you know, that was fine, but it wasn't good enough. So I suppose the real kind of proof in the pudding will be whether it ever becomes good enough, whether we ever see a performance from them this tournament where we look at it and we think, wow, that was just a class, world-class performance from them.
It's funny because we were talking before, Claire, about are we being overly critical on England? But is that because we just expect more from them?
I think as a nation, especially, you know, we do the same to the men's, we have such high expectation and the whole weight of the country is leaning on these players because, you know, we're a footballing nation and we love football. We have high expectations. Yes, we probably are hypercritical, but it's only because we know the potential of the players. And I think if you take it all with a bit of a pinch of salt, there's no harm in having them high expectations. And as you said, Neville's the one who's come out and been so outspoken about it. So for us to kind of be unassuming about it would be contradictory to what he's saying.
Mm. And Norway have won the World Cup before. They finished fourth in 1999 and 2007. But Molly, this England team has evolved beyond them now, some might say. Should we consider Neville's team favourites?
I think we'll go into the game as favourites, but I think, you know, we have to sort of disregard that because we haven't necessarily come up against the best opposition so far in this tournament, and Norway are definitely going to be head and shoulders against compared to anything that we have faced. So I think, yes, maybe we'll go into it as slight favourites, but, you know, those of us that have covered England know that we struggle against teams like Norway, teams that are quite organised. You know, they have got star players as well, you know, let's not forget that. But, you know, I remember when we played Sweden in Rotherham in the lead up to this World Cup, and we just got outplayed and everywhere on the pitch, really. So I think, yes, we'll probably be favourites, but, you know, it's certainly not going to be an easy game. And I think it will actually give England a massive amount of confidence if we can go and beat Norway going further into the competition.
Well, the second game on Sunday was also dramatic, if not quite so controversial. The France captain, Amandine Henry, scored the extra-time winner to defeat Brazil 2-1. Claire, this is likely to be the final time that we see Marta, the legendary Brazilian player, at a World Cup finals. How would you sum up her legacy?
Just what an unbelievable role model she's been. And that, you know, she epitomises what is using it, your platform. And that's what she did last night, a rallying call to the next generation. I think I don't quote me on the actual direct translation, but something along the lines of, you know, the next generation and the women's game depends on you. And I think that's probably to do with her own country as well. You know, it's been difficult for someone to, you know, players to step up and fill her shoes, and it's because she's been such an outstanding player. Mm. And they are aging, and this potentially is the last for her. And yeah, she hasn't won a World Cup, but what she has done is been one of the best players consistently for years and years and years. You know, you've got young girls and boys with Marta on the back of their shirts, and she has inspired a next generation. And she will continue to do so, just probably not on the international stage.
Mm, yeah, the women's game in Brazil really undeveloped, and they're struggling to foster new talent, Molly. And as Claire was just saying there, she did send out a very powerful message to young girls that they do need to work hard to achieve their goals. She said something along the lines of, cry in the beginning so you can smile in the end. She will bow out of the game, not only as a star on the pitch, but off it too, Molly.
I think she's just sort of been one of those players that when you think of women's football, you think of Marta. You think of the personality and the skill and the talent that she brings to the game. And not just Marta, but Cristiano and Formiga. You know, there's a chance that all three of those players will never play in the World Cup again. And it was actually quite emotional watching that game last night, you know, thinking that this was the end for them on the world stage, because, you know, Marta has never got that Olympic gold or World Cup gold. And, you know, it's such a shame because she is such an incredible player and she has done so much for the sport on and off the pitch. Saw the cover of Vogue Brazil that she was on, and she is truly an icon for women's football all over the world, and even more so in Brazil, where, you know, as you mentioned, there might not be the players there that are ready to fill her boots at the moment. And I hope that we see those young players get inspired and sort of have the grassroots facilities over there to allow them to be that good and replace these amazing icons of the women's game. I mean, Formiga, just an incredible player, you know. The longevity of her career is just incomparable, really. And I think it would be really sad if these players go and then Brazil never becomes this good again. So hopefully they can really encourage their younger players to fall in love with the game and achieve as much as Formiga and Marta have done.
Interesting, if you were watching the game last night and previous games as well, you might have seen Marta with bright red lipstick on, not for any particularly makeup reasons. It's because it's a statement for her. The colour is of blood, she says, because we had to leave blood on the pitch. And Rebecca, she is just one of those great players and personalities that we've been lucky to see in the women's game.
Yeah, I think what we have to remember about Marta is that she was a household name before women's football had household names. You know, she was Marta. She's only ever had this sort of one name her whole life, and people knew about her who weren't engaged in women's football at all. That's huge. We still have problems with getting like female footballers' names out there. So I think it can't be underestimated what she did for the profile of the women's game. She was a player with that kind of cult following, that really beautiful gift for football that you know, kind of attracts fans from any background who don't necessarily have investment in the women's game. And she was doing all of this decades before anybody else. So what she's done for the women's game can never be underestimated. And as Molly said, she's got this kind of cultural following outside of just football fans in, you know, back home, but also now globally. And I think hopefully she'll go on and she'll stay involved in the women's game in some way and stay as a role model and you know, someone to lead players of younger generations, but she'll be sorely missed.
Absolutely, yeah. France's win means they now face Spain or the US in a quarterfinal on Friday. Molly, how important is it for the tournament that the host are still in it?
It's absolutely massive. When we was actually coming back from the England game, and you know, it really did feel like a World Cup was going on around us, and it hasn't felt like that for a lot of the time we've been here. And I think people were so invested in that French team, and then it went to extra time, and you were thinking, you know, you sat there like we could be in a World Cup without the host nation, and particularly because of the cultural sort of system in France. If France aren't winning, the public tends to not care too much about sport or the tournament. So I think particularly for the semi-finals and the finals in Lyon, the attendance would have just been massively affected if France hadn't have got through. So I think, you know, it's great for the tournament that France got through, and I think, you know, we'd all love to watch a France-USA semi-final, but we'll have to see how the US-Spain game goes tonight.
You mentioned that potential semi-final then. How good a game will that be, Rebecca, if it is the US against France?
I think it'll be the game of the tournament, to be honest. I mean, obviously, bar the excitement at the final, that is an extraordinary meeting. And really quite early on, obviously, you're talking about one of the favourites of the whole tournament being out of the way by then. So, yeah, I think it's going to be... I'm excited about it already, to be honest. I know we're getting slightly ahead of ourselves. And certainly last night, watching France sort of slightly stutter and maybe stumble a little bit, I did suddenly think, oh, we're not going to get a USA-France game after all. But it looks like we will now, obviously provided Spain don't pull off a blinder tonight. But I think it would just be an amazing spectacle for the sport. I think it will cement that global image of women's football as a joy to watch, and I'm really excited to see even just stuff like the viewing figures afterwards. I think it's gonna really take off.
So we know France and England are in the last eight, along with Germany and Norway so far. Claire, who's impressed you then?
I know Germany have gone under the radar, but they're a bit of a silent assassin there. They've got such a depth of quality, but France, for me, yes, they did look like they stuttered, but they've always been, their mentality has always been questioned, and I think we saw a turning point in them being able to actually take the game to Brazil in that extra time, and previously where they failed at this stage. But I think they've learned a lot. They've got some fantastic players. Henri, I really like the combination with Diani and Gouvin in the game, and I think they're going to be a handful for anyone to deal with. So I'm still, initially I was saying Norway, but I think England have got too much for Norway. So I'm tipping France.
Oh, there you go. Okay, Molly and Rebecca, thank you. Well, that is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Claire Rafferty, Matt Dickinson, Rebecca Myers and Molly Hudson. Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It is just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. We'll be back on Friday to see if England can make it through to the World Cup semi-finals.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two
Tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.